Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 10th. I'm Ray Graff, joining us once again to talk about recent events, developments, and technologies in the field of climate change and alternative energy research is Dan DeLurie, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School and former White House Director of Clean Energy. Dan has 25 years experience over that, including as an executive with utilities and clean energy companies. Give us a call if you wish. I'll give you the regular Vox Pop number today, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or reach out via email, voxpop@wamc.org is the email, and the number is 800-348-2551. Dan DeLurie, Green Energy, your call's coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, here to take your calls today. Questions about alternative energy and climate change is Dan DeLurie, Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School. Over 25 years of experience has Dan, including as an executive with utilities and clean energy companies. Dan is the former White House Director of Clean Energy, where he focused on the decarbonization of the nation's electric system. A UN-accredited delegation head to the UN climate change meetings known as COPs, Dan is considered a pioneer in content development, policy, and programs that combine climate change with new electricity technologies. You have a question for Dan DeLurie? Always a fun guest. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. Dan DeLurie, how you doing? Welcome back.
I'm doing well. Good to see you, Ray, and happy to be back.
I made it through the beginning of the program without giving the fund drive number, which is amazing. We just got done about 11:30. And before we get rolling, thanks to everybody, 6,200 or whatever people who made pledges in this fund drive. A million thanks. We cannot do it without you. And so thanks again. To last, I'll mention it for now. Okay. We have another fund drive coming in October. So if you like that one, we'll do it again. Dan, you have been all over the place, man. You were in the West Coast. What were you doing out there?
Well, for the first time, I attended the Hollywood Climate Summit in L.A. And it's a very different type of event for me to attend.
Why?
Well, there weren't too many climate people there, you know, who work.
Escorts? Who were there? what do you mean?
No, it was filmmakers, writers, producers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And that's why I went, because one of the things since last September, when I attended the Climate Film Festival in New York,
yeah.
And got involved in some workshops there, it really intrigued me, and I've been sort of following up on two counts. One, trying to see how I might be a resource to filmmakers to make sure they get the content right in their films when they want to say something about clean energy or climate change or whatever.
Not for nothing, there's good money being technical advisors to films. You could move out there and probably make a mint.
Well, we'll see. I'll let you know if that happens.
All right, fair enough. Continue.
And then the other side of that coin is new films or new productions. And as you might guess, I have my own ideas on that, including...
You mean propaganda films?
Yeah, well, informational films.
Okay, fine.
But I mean, part of what's happening now, this is the good news, is that the filmmaking community is starting to see... storytelling about climate change and clean energy as being a bona fide lane to step into. They know that people are interested in climate change. I mean, they read the surveys and so on. And so you're seeing more and more films and TV shows. I mean, an example is The Morning Show on Apple TV. They've inserted climate change a lot into their programming. And it's not just ones like Don't Look Up, the DiCaprio film, which was all about climate change, but it's having climate change be inserted as an additional topic or narrative in something that they're doing anyway.
Is there really, Hollywood being very money-driven, you think there's money to be made there? I did not see the DiCaprio film. Could you remind me what it was about and how it was related to climate change?
Yeah, and actually, I've been a bit of a critic of that film. It was about a meteor coming towards the Earth to destroy it. And DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence played a couple of scientists who went to the government to try and warn them that this was going to happen and that they should do something about it. And, of course, they didn't do anything about it.
So this is an allegory for climate change.
Exactly. And in that sense, it was good in terms of not listening to the scientists. What I was a critic of is that climate change is not a big bang. It's more an insidious creep in terms of how it's going to change things. And so, you know, but otherwise, I think it was really great to get that idea out there, especially with that kind of a budget and that kind of a cast.
So, you know, you have this great Substack, okay?
Yeah.
And you're always sending emails out once a week or once every couple of weeks.
Once a week, yeah.
And just saying where you've been. Now, I know you went to Hollywood. You also did a stage show in D.C. What is a stage? DeLore doing a stage show in Washington, D.C.
It was not a stage show. It was it was a panel that I ran on stage at the opening ceremony at D.C. Climate
Week. So there was no
Week.
Juggling or an opening act or anything?
No, they didn't give me enough time for that.
Dang, okay.
But since you gave me a reason here, I will mention my Substack.
Yeah, sure.
So Dan DeLurey, DeLurey on Substack. You can find that out and you'll get some information there before you see it in the general media in many cases.
It's both informative and fun, and I think it's a great in for anyone interested in the topic, so I recommend
this.
Yeah,
I do try and make it fun.
You do. And you know what? You're reasonably fun on the show, and you're even more fun on Substack. So
back to the D.C. climate.
It was a battle of the generations. Explain.
Yeah, exactly. I decided and I persuaded the people putting on that climate week. There are climate weeks happening in almost every city in the country now, and there's a network, and they're all working together. But in D.C., I persuaded them to let me grab a Gen Z climate person and a millennial climate person. I played the boomer. And
very accurately, I might add.
We didn't have that much time, so I couldn't include a Gen Z, which is Gen Z is always afraid that they're not going to be included.
And
so
they didn't want to come.
No, I just didn't have room, and so
you excluded the Gen Z.
Yes, and that's what they're always
afraid
of.
So they were right then.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, except that when I got slammed by the Gen Z for being a boomer, I had a couple of Gen X people come up to me afterwards and say, "Thanks for taking a bullet, Dan."
So
what I did was I put these people up on stage and we just freeformed it and talked about, you know, who's to blame, how the generations get their information, how they think about it differently, and so on. And so it was a really fun session.
And is there audio tape or videotape or
is
it online? Can you find it anywhere? Do you have a link in your Substack?
I don't have it as public yet, but I'll probably put it on my Substack.
All right.
Thanks for reminding me.
All right. Well, that's fine. It's what I'm here for. Dan DeLurey is our guest today. We talk about alternative energy and climate change every few months. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll get to the calls after the first break, so hang in there if you're on hold. Dan, what is this about your mother's apple pie? What is this?
Well, my mother, Gloria DeLurey, was one of the best apple pie bakers around.
Really?
Her pies always went first.
She's not been on my show. I wanted to tell you that.
Her pies always went first at the local bake sale. She had a crafty way of designing an A into the crust.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I used that as an analogy for what's happening with energy use. My mother's apple pies never got any bigger. They stayed the same size. Now, today, there's a lot of good news about the ramping up of solar energy and its contribution to electricity and all of that. But so if you just look at that, it looks great. But you've got to realize that in terms of energy use, the pie is expanding. And in order to fill that pie, we're building new natural gas generating plants. We're keeping old coal plants open And now the administration seeks to do even more
just
to
last
support.
Week.
That
yep.
was the headline mm-hmm. from last week. So again, you know, we can't afford any more emissions at this point. We should be way below what we are. And so I was just trying to explain in a different way that, you know, don't just look over here on the left, but you got to look on the right to see what's going on.
You know, it's a brilliant move because dopes like me, you say pie and then we're all over it. We're going to be listening. The number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to join the conversation right after this break.
The other thing was I wanted to pick up on is pledges, since you did mention the P word.
Thank you for bringing up pledges. All right, now I'll give the fund drive number. No, well, go ahead. Broken pledges.
Yeah. I did an essay on my Substack, a couple weeks ago or whatever, and because I monitor this very closely, but so much of what we're counting on in terms of future emissions reductions come in the form of pledges by countries, by cities, by corporations. And the problem with a pledge, of course, is that you can't really count it until it happens.
Yep.
And so across the board, companies are cutting back on their pledge. They're expanding it. They're throwing it aside. A lot of governments here and across the pond are saying that because of affordability, we can't afford to do these clean energy and climate things
anymore.
This
is a legitimate concern, right? There's only so much money to go around
for
these
countries. Well, it is a legitimate concern.
What do you do?
Well, you have to look for other answers, I think, or you have to, I mean, I don't want to use the T word in addition to the P word.
Okay, I don't know what the T, I'm very tired.
Is a tax.
T is my, tired is my T word.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
That's right, yeah. But it's a case of where, you know, we can't put off trying to reduce emissions any longer. There's so much baked in already that, and I know it's hard. I know it's something just like the national debt and other things that you can kind of kick the can down the road. But, you know, we have to try and compromise and walk and chew gum on this one.
Our guest today is Dan DeLury, who is Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School, and was also the White House Director of Clean Energy in the Biden administration. The number here is 800-348-2551. You know, we talked about this pie, and frankly, I perked up. One of the things in this pie is solar, and we just saw in Connecticut legislation signed about balcony solar. So hold this thought. We'll take a break. We'll take some calls. But I want you to explain to me what balcony solar is in a simple way. Our guest today is Dan DeLury, 800-348-2551. Oh, yeah. Little Clapton. Here's my gift to all who made that donation today. Yeah, let's play it there, Mike Bowen. Yeah, buddy. Hey, if you pitched in, thanks a lot. Fun drive over. We'll see you in October. Our guest today is Dan DeLury, 800-348-2551. And let's start with a couple of emails here, and then we'll jump to the phones. This one is from Chris in the 518. Do you think AI is a net positive or negative when it comes to energy use? Is there any credible modeling that actually quantifies the net climate impact of AI, weighing energy demand against AI-assisted gains in grid efficiency, materials discovery, climate modeling, so on? Or is the AI will solve it argument essentially faith-based at this point?
Wow. There's a lot in that question. I like the way the question is posed because there are, just speaking in terms of energy and electricity, there are sure to be benefits in terms, I mean, the grid has been stupid and dumb for so long.
Yeah.
That's been a major focal point for me in terms of introducing smart meters and smart grid technologies and so on. So, in order to manage something, you have to have better information and controls, including automatic. So AI should be able to help on all of that. The other side of the coin in terms of AI's usage and how much electricity it demands and all that, that's kind of yet to be seen. I mean, you know, I think we're all reading the same things. You read one article and it says, well, you know, the forecasts are too optimistic, and another article says that they're lowballing it. And
yeah.
So I think it's really hard to tell. The one thing that is happening, and this is a big positive and it makes sense, is the hyperscalers, the companies doing data centers, are beginning to modify their data centers to become more flexible.
In what way?
In terms you at home in the ways, let's say you use your devices, you know, your heat pump or your, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
The idea of load management or demand management or, you know, we talked before in the show about time-based pricing and responding to price signals and changing.
Right.
So if a data center can be managed more flexibly and is not a constant 24-hour demand, then at least theoretically, and I mean, it's been proven in other areas, you can maybe not have so many data centers. But the other thing I want to say about data centers is I don't think I've ever seen anything happen like this before. I mean, I was a little bit ahead because I went to Davos back in 25
right.
and realized how big AI was going to be.
Are the Bilderbergers doing?
And back then I said, whoa, this is really going to be a challenge, and it's going to be a big NIMBY issue. And now it's the biggest NIMBY issue in the country.
But
forget about solar farms in terms of how big the issue is.
But it's clear that genie is out of the bottle. Data
yes.
centers are going to happen.
Yes.
In order for this country to be competitive with all of our potential adversaries.
Correct.
They're going to happen. And even if they didn't happen, with the electrification of things, the demands on the grid are going to be more and more.
Correct.
And how do you do that without pricing every consumer out of the market?
And that's in part because electrification is a climate-friendly activity, as we've talked about before. And so, we want everything to be electric, if possible, other than those things that can't possibly do that. And so, but I think, you know, companies, and including utilities, have been through overbuild cycles before. And so I still think the jury's out on exactly. So I'm still on the side of the coin of how much we need data centers
yeah.
and how many we'll need and what the demand will be and all of that. I see some of the studies and some of the forecasts, and they're not all saying the same thing.
But modular nuclear takes care of everything, right?
There have been some advances lately in modular nuclear, small modular reactors,
yeah.
Known as SMRs, and so they're coming along.
Do you have one?
I don't have one, no.
Vincent writes in, as we know, in a free market economy driven by supply and demand, the market should be applauding increased and low-cost renewable energy supply. Why isn't the marketing in general, including investors and business customers, all in on renewable energy and demanding more of it on a political level? And that's from Vincent in the 845.
Yeah, thanks, Vincent. On the first part, the market is sort of all in. I mean, the numbers on solar I think this is correct to say that last year, all of the incremental electricity added to the U.S. grid was solar. So solar in a competitive market or in any type of a bid that a utility or a regional operator puts out, solar wins. It can't be beat. The other thing that I think Vincent mentioned there is, you know, what to do to maybe use even more. You know,
this is
why
a PR question, really, more than
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, why isn't there more of a... And again, you know, there are two types of solar. There's the solar farm and industrial and commercial solar. And then there's also, home solar, including this new thing called balcony
which
solar.
Which we'll get to in a little bit, yeah.
So I think, you know, I think that's going to happen. I think solar is going to get some political momentum, because it's not just a red state, blue state thing. I mean, states like Utah are going gangbusters on solar. And so I think there might be a critical mass developing in terms of talking about solar and promoting it. But that's just my viewpoint at this juncture.
Our guest today is Dan DeLory, who is Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School and was the White House Director of Clean Energy. The number here is 800-348-2551. Speaking of solar, it's Merle in Argyle. Hello, Merle. You're on.
All right. I want to talk about balcony solar.
Balcony solar. Okay.
Yeah. One, how does it work? Two.
Stand by, Merle. Are you hearing anything, Dan?
No.
Ah, well, we should have taken care of that a long time ago. Merle, stand by. Why don't you whistle a tune, and I'll adjust the headphones for Dan. Do you hear anything at all?
Okay.
Let's turn it up. What do you think? Can you hear anything?
No? Yeah.
You can.
Hey, Merle, can I hear you?
Okay, there we go. Yeah, I can. Can you hear me?
I can.
Can
yeah,
I
sorry.
Hear myself?
I don't know what happened there.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. Solar balcony.
Right.
Thing. Panel.
Right.
I understand you just plug them in the wall and it saves you electricity.
Correct.
Can you briefly say how that works without somebody like an electrician coming in?
You know, that's so interesting. So yeah. the way these work, Dan, is you're plugging it directly in and feeding
Correct.
It back in? I thought that there was some question about that.
It has a mini inverter that switches it from DC to AC.
All right, explain what you know.
That was it. No, I'm kidding.
No.
But no, balcony solar is called balcony solar more because it began in the EU. And they have many more balconies, as anyone knows who has traveled through Western Europe. And so it's literally, think of a solar panel that attaches to the front, you know, railing part of your balcony. And you just plug it in.
Most balconies are not enormous. Hang on a minute, Merle. Now, we know Connecticut just passed legislation. I think
Correct.
The New York is on hold temporarily.
Correct.
Is that correct?
As I understand, it's on the governor's desk.
Okay, so we'll see what happens. Now, here's the thing.
What about Vermont?
What about Vermont, Merle? What do you think? You're in New York, right?
I'm in New York. I'm just curious. He's from Vermont.
Yeah.
Are they doing it?
Yeah, balcony solar is on the move in almost every state across the country. So I don't know, even in my home state of Vermont, I don't know what the latest is on that, but I know there's a bill moving through the legislature there.
So
maybe they did it, and I just, in the last days here.
Are there any balconies over there in Vermont?
There are, yes. There are. But it doesn't have to be a balcony. I mean, you can.
I understand.
Yeah, you've got it against the house.
Merle,
yeah.
Here's the thing, though. As I understand it, you're not most balconies are not that big. You're not going to generate that much
Correct.
Current.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so these are
right.
only
you're
for not... these are only for always on appliances, right? Is that basically the deal? Fridges
well,
and things
you don't,
like that?
You don't dedicate them to an appliance. It's, you know, I mean, they plug
So you're just feeding it back in. How much savings can you possibly get from three panels on a balcony?
I mean, I think the panels are like from 500 kilowatts to 1,000 maybe or 1,200.
1,000 kilowatts?
Yeah. And so I think the cost is roughly the same. I think they top out at like $1,000 or whatever. As to the savings, I've not seen numbers. I don't know.
Well, it's a coming thing. Merle, are you going to do this?
Well, no, I want to, yes.
Okay, good.
I got a slight roof. And, Ray, can I ask you a question off the air?
Off the air or on the air?
Yeah.
If you call me.
I have a question. I just want to have you call me.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you email us at VoxPop?
Don't email.
Ah, for Pete's sake, Merle. Well, listen, it's been a long, fun drive, and it's been a long day. And we'll work it out, brother.
Okay.
All right, man?
Okay.
Thanks, man.
Thanks a lot
for the call. 800-348-2551. Merle is a classic, and he is a great, great caller on this show. Jeff writes in, ask Dan if he'd share his mom's recipe for her famous apple pie. We'd all be grateful.
Okay, but first I want to correct myself, and the look in your eyes when I said kilowatts.
Yeah.
It's watts,
yeah.
Not kilowatts.
1,000 kilowatts.
Yeah, okay.
from it's pretty good.
Okay. All right, the secret to my mom's apple pies was using Northern Spy apples.
Oh, that's a great apple.
Northern Spy. It's a great apple. It's firm, you know, tart, but still sweet. And you want to slice the apple pieces very thin and layer them. But first you mix them up with cinnamon and sugar before you layer.
I can't believe we're doing this. Honestly, I cannot believe we're doing this.
Food Friday?
I was about to do a follow-up. We're going to leave it alone and we'll move on.
All right.
It's Dan DeLore, who is senior fellow for energy and climate at Vermont Law and Graduate School, apparently knows a lot about pies. Let's go to Jim in Adams. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray, and yay, Dan.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Yes, sir. I have the comment. I think I made it before on one of your programs. I missed the last few.
Oh.
But electrification, electric cars, electric batteries, all these very rare minerals and rare metals, it's a dead-end alley. It's a short-term solution only. We should be going with compressed air, pneumatically driven vehicles and such. And you can convert all kinds of energy into compressed air, and how soon are we going to run out of compressed air, out of air in the atmosphere, I should say? Not too soon. And all you need is any material you can make a sufficiently strong tank out of, whether it's metal, ceramic, fiberglass, whatever.
Interesting.
Every time you look, any of these technologies that are being advanced today as being the solution, they're dead-end alleys, because every time you look at them, you've got huge pollution issues right from the mining to the disposal of them when their lifespan is done. And there was an article several years ago in a newspaper, I don't know if it was the New York Times or some other Boston paper, about a company in France. They didn't mention the company's name. They said it was doing experimentation with pneumatically powered automobiles.
Okay.
And I've never heard anything too much about that since then.
Dan's got a comment here.
You've got me, Jim, on compressed air. I mean, I'm just not that familiar with it. But here's how I want to respond. And it's the same type of response as when people have asked about hydrogen vehicles. And it's, the distribution network of how you change the fleet. And, it's enough of a challenge now as we're trying to roll out charging stations for EVs. But, in terms of having an infrastructure that will facilitate and accommodate compressed air vehicles, I think that's more the challenge than the idea of a vehicle running on compressed air.
All right. Well, Jim, thank you for that one. 800-348-2551 is our number. Dan DeLore is our guest today, and we'll go to Brattleboro, Vermont. Joyce. Hello, Joyce.
Hi. I am so excited to ask my question to you, Dan. I am very concerned about the use of geoengineering in the stratospheric chemical aerosol operation to counteract the sun's rays.
And
NPR, including Marketplace 2 weeks ago, actually had some news clips on expressing concern, and I've been following geoengineering watch with Dane Whittington, and I agree with him. I'm getting really sick from all these chemicals in the air, and nobody asked me whether I agreed with trying to block the sun this way.
I think Dan has a couple comments
on this. Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned, too, about geoengineering, at least as described, and there's new ways coming out, but the main one is the one you talked about, Joyce, which is putting tiny reflective materials into the atmosphere to reflect back the sun. I mean, each time I say it or hear about it, I say, oh my God, why are we even thinking about that? Because no one has come up with how that's going to be controlled.
Yeah, because the great ideas usually never go wrong.
Well, out in California, one local government, I think it was a local government, actually did a little experiment without informing any of the other local governments around them. And so, but here's the other thing that kind of bugs me is that it's the idea of, a holy grail or something, that there's something out there that we can do so that we don't have to take all these other steps to reduce emissions. Mm-hmm. That just seems crazy to me that we would resort to something like that. But again, we are a technology focused and based society. And so I know there are a lot of people out there that they're concerned about climate change. They may be fearful of climate change, but I think they think that technology will somehow save us. And it will.
Well, you're talking about all these technological things that will, quote unquote, save us.
That's right. But let's take carbon capture, direct extraction from the air, known as DAC. I mean, there's only one plant in the world operating right now. Okay, so it's great, and it's going to come, and it's going to help us take out some of what we've already put up there. But it's not a solution on this day and this week to what we're doing in terms of emissions and reduction of those emissions.
You know, you talked about these broken promises across the world, and this to me, I mean, if you make the pledge and then you break the pledge, then really we're at square one, right? Are we at square one?
No, no, no. We're not at square one, but we're sort of, I'm looking for a clever way to say
square
that we're
two.
We're behind the curve.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we all of the estimates, these pledges, for example, these pledges were made, some of them back in the 90s, as to what they would reduce by 2030. We're only 4 years from 2030. No one's close. In terms of the Paris Accord, no countries are meeting their pledge to reduce emissions according to what they pledged in Paris.
Why do you think that is?
Because there's some other shiny object, such as affordability, that
A pretty shiny object.
Yes,
because ultimately, all the money comes from the people, right?
Sorry, yes, that was probably a bad choice of words.
Yes.
But it's still, what I'm trying to say is that there are other things that are more visible. I mean, how many times here have we talked about climate change as being something that, you know, you only notice a little bit now, and so why do something about it? But if you don't do something, if you don't take a preemptive strike against it, then it's just going to be worse. It's like, you know, how do you get people to make an investment or pay something now in order to get the benefit later? That's always a tough thing.
Dan DeLury is our guest. Let's take a quick break here. We'll check the email bag. We'll go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. A quick check of the email bag coming up. All right, I have to go a little long on that. It's been a long day, and love me some Count Basie with Booty Wood on the plunger trombone there. Booty's Blues here on Vox Pop. Thank you for indulging me, Dan.
Yeah, I just want to say that I hope the listeners can imagine what I got to see here, which was Ray up and dancing in the
studio.
Well,
that's not true, because I don't have the strength to dance at this time, but I was tapping my pen. That is some good stuff. Basie had a couple few great plunger trombone. You know what I mean by plunger trombone?
Yeah.
And so, you know, Al Gray, one of the greats. Booty Wood was there in the late 70s, and that was a nice little number there. All right, I digress. Now let's go to the email bag. Dan, this is from Jackie. If you were building a new home in Hoosick Falls, what would you use for heat? Solar, electric, geothermal, heat pumps, water-based? ?
Well, as a native Hoosier, although
Hoosier.
Well, we used to call ourselves that in Hoosick Falls.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I grew up at 99 High in Hoosick Falls.
Okay. Well, you leave your recreational activities out of it.
So I assume, Jackie, you're talking about a new home, I think. And so you've got some choices. You certainly can look at solar. You don't have to look at anything other than electric, I don't think. But it depends on what kind of house you're building, how many square feet, and so on.
Don't you have the river running right through the town?
Yes, it does. Yes.
Can't you just put a little dam up there?
There was a dam a long time ago.
Yeah.
Apparently. Yeah.
Right. Get some beavers. You could do it yourself.
Okay.
All right. Let's go.
Shall I continue?
Oh, all right. Go ahead.
So Jackie, you should really be looking at heat pumps. And if you can do solar, do that as well. I mean, there's an ulterior motive for me saying that, which is electrification. As we've talked about in the show, each time that a new device uses electricity on the grid instead of something else, then the grid gets cleaner. So your toaster gets cleaner every year by just sitting there on your kitchen counter. That's the whole.
That's a neat way to think about
it. That's the secret to it, or it's the gift that keeps on giving when you use electricity. So I think, you know, you ought to be able to use heat pumps to really take care of what you need. And we've talked a lot about heat pumps in
recent shows. You're trying to
stop
me because I'm going to say they're not that efficient when it's freezing cold.
Well, we can go there if you want.
We've been there a million times.
But here's I want to pick up on the geothermal idea.
Yeah.
Geothermal is more expensive, but it's getting less expensive. It really depends on how far down the heat source is on your lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I should know, but I don't, how they test for that. But again, there are, you know, this brings up something, Ray, that I think we alluded to before, which is the in the Inflation Reduction Act, there were rebates.
Right, and we thought they went away, right?
And they went away, right. And they've been restored, mostly. Okay, but the rebates for replacing an electrical item are back.
Interesting.
Okay, as long as it's more efficient than the one that you did.
And what appliances are we talking about here?
Oh, a whole host of them. I mean, it's not even all appliances. This is called the HOMES program, which stands for Homeowners Managing... whatever, but so these are rebates that would come through your state energy department or office. In fact, I checked the NYSERDA website this morning, and so NYSERDA has caught up with this new change, bringing these rebates back.
Huh.
And so so it's even for things like insulation and, you know, making your envelope more energy efficient.
Which you really need if you're going to have those
heat pumps
work in the cold weather. You need a lot of insulation.
Absolutely. What I don't know, Joyce, is on a brand new construction home, I think they would still apply, but you'd want to check with NYSERDA on that. But here's the other thing.
All right.
Fuel switching did not come back. In other words, electrification, which I talked about a moment ago, which is so very, very important, did not come back.
Huh.
So you cannot fuel switch. You can't go from natural gas to electricity.
Dan DeLoria is our guest today from Vermont Law and Graduate School. Dan is Senior Fellow for Energy and Climate, former White House Director of Clean Energy. Mark in Greenwich writes, curious why wind generation isn't more talked about and available at the house level. I live in a windy farm in Greenwich, New York. Is wind power generating a viable thing for me?
Probably not on a small home-based scale, at least the last time that I looked, and that's maybe a year ago or whatever. But you're not seeing it because it just doesn't work. The numbers don't work. Now, if you're in a windy area or a valley, first of all, you can go to some state department in your state, and normally they have wind maps, and you can look and see how your area is rated for wind.
Yeah.
And maybe you've got, because it's hard unless you're measuring wind yourself day by day. You know, you can't go by just a windy day and say, you know, I'm in a windy area. But you can look at these maps, and they help determine where the locations are for wind farms, but also presumably individual wind generators.
But if you're going to put your own wind, and I guess it depends on local zoning more than anything, but if you're going to put a windmill up, I mean, it's going to have to be pretty big to generate some.
There's no way you could do that from a cost standpoint.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a smaller wind tower, you know, scaffolding type of wind thing. I mean, some people have them, but they're just not cost effective, and that's why you mainly see them as a one-off.
Well, let's jump back to the phones with Dan DeLoria, 800-348-2551. Elaine is in Millbrook. Elaine, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two things to say. One, just a comment about what you were just discussing, the windmills. When we went to Portugal 5 years ago, the countryside was dotted with farms and small towns, and you'd pass a farm with 3 cows and 10 chickens, a windmill, and solar panels on the barn. And it's all very individual there, and it seems to work beautifully. The country's doing very well in terms of that kind of progressive outlook. But it takes the government and a population that's open to it. But my real question is about fuel-efficient cars. I'm hearing, along with everyone else, constantly, 20 times a day, about the price at the gas pump. And there's never the, for me, obvious follow-up. You know, we're not going to have much control over what Trump does in the Strait of Hormuz. But we have our first hybrid car. And that means that much of the time when we're just running around to the grocery store and the cleaners, we're not using gasoline. And it's a great comfort to know that we're not using that much gasoline. I don't know why more coverage isn't given to this when news organizations trot out the business about the gas pump and then never follow up with there are a few ways you can save some money if you're open to it. That's
okay.
It.
Yeah, I mean, you're singing to the choir in that I've been driving an EV.
I know, but I'm also talking to the listening audience.
Yes, and thank you for doing that. But I want to go back to Portugal. Because I suspect that if you're talking about a farm with three cows and a wind turbine, I suspect the government is paying for the cows as well as the wind turbine. I know that in places like Switzerland, there's such a subsidy for these people in the mountains that have just a couple of cows. That's not a viable farm.
I know I'm exhausted, but did Elaine mention cows in Portugal?
Yes, she did.
Okay,
yes.
I'm sorry. I must have missed that one. I apologize, Elaine, and thank you for the call.
Ray, I can just do the rest of the show if you
don't
want.
Don't worry, it's fine. Okay. I've been hallucinating for about 15 minutes, but we're fine. Let's go to Jill in Waterford. Jill, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Hi, welcome.
I have a question regarding, let me preface by saying I am not an AI fan.
Okay.
Nor am I considering getting anything for AI. However, I do have a question with regards to the data centers.
Right.
Everybody complains about AI data centers because they make so much electricity or require so much electricity, and how supposedly they are raising the price of electricity for everyone.
Yeah.
That part I do not understand, because it's like whoever produces the most electricity, that's who's paying for it.
If you use it, you pay for it.
If I use more...
Yeah.
Right.
Jill, I'm with you. I can't understand it either. Yeah, I cannot understand it. Except
whoever owns the data center, they're going to be the ones paying up the wazoo.
Is Jill right?
Not their neighbors.
Well, that's the movement right now.
What?
Is to have the data centers bring their own generation.
But why would we, even if they're using the regular, why would we have to pay for that?
Well, because just forget about data centers for a moment, but when anybody, a new house or a new factory or whatever gets added to the grid, I mean, that's all just washed together.
Yeah, but I'm not paying Jill's electric bill. I mean, I'd love to, but I can't, Jill. I'm sorry.
You are in theory. We're all paying a bit of everyone else's electricity bill. That's the way that the grid. So when a new transmission or distribution line is built, I mean, that is rolled into the rates, and we all pay that.
And so I still don't understand why that's a thing.
I'm not defending it. I'm saying that's the way it is, and that's the way it's always been in the electricity industry.
Well, you worked in a White House, man. I mean, can't you help me out?
I was working on other things. I couldn't work on everything.
Right.
But it's an important
thing. News to me.
But it's an important thing to understand. So data centers are a massive new demand to put on the grid. And that's why states and legislatures are taking steps. I know some states have, one of the states around us here just passed something about data centers.
Let me ask you a question. You have a Tesla, right? You drive an electric car.
Yeah.
And I just saw somewhere I was driving around the area recently, they're putting up new electric charging stations, and you see them everywhere.
Right.
Who pays for that?
It depends. I mean, in some cases, a
the
private...
owner of the-
Okay, you have to pay when you pull up.
Yeah, if I stop in, if I'm driving between here and New York or Washington, I pull in and I pay the electricity. I don't make any contribution to the charger. In many cases, the charger is a deal between, let's say it's a Tesla charger,
right,
between that and the, you know, the fast food gas station.
Gotcha. There, I understand.
As something like that. I mean, but there's no one model there. I mean, it's like when I got my charger from my utility in Vermont, they gave me the charger for free as long as I agreed to sign up to use the electricity at night.
I was basically asking about the electricity use and who's. But if you're paying like you're paying at a gas tank, then it makes sense. It's a model
exactly,
that I understand.
Yeah, but we should on a future show maybe talk a little bit about how the utility system works and how who pays for what and how that's rolled in.
Yeah, I'd love
in
to learn
separated.
More about that.
But I want to go back to the data center.
Yeah.
The studies that I've seen most recently, data centers are adding a lot to the grid, and that's why this movement to make them bring their own generation, but not the majority of the price increases are due to data centers. It's due to overall expansion of demand and the build-out of the infrastructure to serve that.
So it costs us more when that happens.
Yes.
That's, so once again, the public is taking a brunt
well,
of something that is big business.
Yeah, that's
and
why
I still
we have,
pay my electric bill.
That's why we have public service commissions, because the utility goes in and the public service commission reviews their proposal and then decides, A, whether to approve it, and then how to allocate it between, say, commercial customers or residential customers.
All right, well,
and again, I don't want to get further
well,
into
we're
the
almost
weeds.
Out of time.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, right. I can leave you in here and you can talk for half an hour, but we'll be off the air. Very quickly from Mike in the 518, could you talk about waste to energy? In Sweden, they can incinerate trash for energy, actually import trash from other places. The U.S. has not tapped into this. Why not?
You know, I'm not going to attempt a good answer at that. There was a major move for that. It was called resource recovery going back into the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
But, Mike, I don't know the answer to that, so I'll just pass.
Fair
I'm
enough.
Sorry.
All right, let's go grab a quick call or two before we wrap it up with Dan DeLury, and we'll go to Chris in Brantford, Connecticut. Hello there, Chris. You're on.
Hi, Ray, and congratulations, and thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Hey, man, thank you.
My family and I lived in Vermont off-grid for quite a few years and have a fair amount of experience with it. And where we seemed to save the most money was with solar hot water generation. And I'd just like to shout out to people that that's not that difficult to do. You can do it, you know, without costing an arm or leg. You can make it yourself. But that's where we save bucks.
And I've seen it. Those are the pipes on the roof,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, that was the original solar.
Yeah, I remember that back in the day.
Photovoltaic was too expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, and so if you saw a solar installation on a roof, it was hot water. Not to heat your hot water in your house, but running pipes through those panels and heating up the water or whatever other fluid was in there. I've sort of lost track of that, to be honest, because it's sort of been overtaken now because of the price difference to just go straight to electricity,
photovoltaics. Photovoltaics coming down in price enough where it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
Chris, did you build your own when you were off the grid in Vermont?
Well, we built the house. We buried it on three sides, south facing with big windows.
Cool.
And we had this, but we did use a standard roof that we could put the solar panels and the solar hot water tubes on, and very, very, very efficient.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right.
One thing I want to slip in here is...
All right, we're almost out of time. Go ahead.
I just want to slip in that I now have, as I said before, an electric hot water heater. I mean, a heat pump hot water heater.
Okay.
And so that is something you can get incentives for, and they work.
All right. Dan DeLury, Chris, thanks for the call. We're out of time. Dan DeLury, once again, people who want to check out your Substack, which really is both entertaining and really educational. How do they do that?
You just go to Substack and search for Dan DeLury.
Spell it.
DeLury.
And we'll find out what exotic locale that Dan will be going to next. He's been hobnobbing with the movie producers and who knows what. You know what? Maybe he's going to be in pictures. Anyway, Dan, thank you. We will see you next time.
Thanks, Ray.
Support comes from Fatigan's Nursery, Latham, announcing the new greenhouse, now open, filled with annuals and tropicals. for Spring Color. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. Family-owned and operated since 1920. Fadigans.com. Thanks again to Dan Delury of Vermont Law and Graduate School for being here. Thank you for calling. Thanks for the emails. Sorry if we didn't get to your question today. He'll be back. We do this regularly on this program. Thanks to our engineer, the returning Mike Bowen. Thank you, Michael. Peter Hughes jumped in and screened the calls. Thanks, man. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh boy, fun drive over. Time for some fun. It's gardening. We'll see you at 2:00.